Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague.
Dr. Andrew Tresetta, another GP from Somerset, working for NHS Somerset.
And today we're talking to Patrick about effective communication. Patrick, could you just introduce yourself and explain a little bit about why you're here?
Patrick E speaking. Hi there, I'm 54 years old. I work at Musgrove Park Hospital in Taunton for the Somerset Foundation Trust in the sterile service department. I'm a team leader there. And yeah, I'm here because I think effective communication is very important, particularly as a stutterer who stuttered their whole life or stammered their whole life. And yeah, I think it's very, very important, and it's important to be effective and as clear and concise as you can be.
And how do we make sure that we do effective communication?
Well, I'm sure it's been said before, but yeah, there's far more to it than just the actual vocalization of sounds and words. There's the body language that you look at, there's the timbre of the conversation, there's basically being, you know, thinking about what you're saying rather than just allowing yourself to push on regardless. You know, don't necessarily worry about filling up a space. Just because you're pausing or other people are pausing doesn't mean you have to go, blah, 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 blah. No, you can, you know, just basically, you know, you can, you know, take your time, pause and be effective.
That's interesting, because some of us are quite good at hearing a space and thinking we have to fill it. And some of us, of course, have grown up in families where listening is a competitive sport, waiting for the next gap to get your words in. And so, Patrick, I'm interested in a bit more of your backstory, if you're kind enough to share. I don't know very much about stuttering and stammering. I wonder sometimes, for some of us, whether we... whether we dry up under a moment of tension when we're not quite sure what we're going to say. Is that a very simplified way of looking at it, or is it something completely different?
Well, from a stutterer's point of view, and again, yeah, I've been a stutterer my entire life. And I think it's not just a question of drawing up. It's actually the act of communication, the act of speaking to somebody. And in the past, I mean, I've been, you know, really, really guilty of avoiding situations. I used to avoid speaking up in class at school. I was on a very, very select and small group of friends as well who were really close, understood me. And, you know, when they were speaking to me, they understood that I was a stutterer and that I needed time. You know, sometimes they teased me a little bit. And yeah, but speech wise, I think it's just a real issue with, you know, just generally speaking up. And, you know, so many times I've been in a conversation where I've tried to speak in my turn. And if there's a conversation, a topic going on, I tried to speak up and found myself completely and utterly just freezing, not just, you know, not drawing up, but and not being able to speak, you know, literally not being able to speak. So, you know, I was really, really lucky. I was introduced to the Maguire program and the Maguire technique, which is not only a physical method of speaking, but also psychological. You know, so you push yourself forward, you're encouraged to push yourself forward using the technique that we're given in a four-day initial program. And, you know, having those tools to effectively communicate is so important. But you have the tools, but you don't necessarily know how to communicate, because, as you rightly said, you know, it's difficult when you dry up in a subject, actually going, right, okay, how can I reacquaint myself with the subject? How can I speak further? So pausing and using that pause to really think about what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, and being more assertive with your speech and with your listener and listening to your listener too, and not allowing your own perceptions to run away with you, really. You know, is this person laughing at me? Is this person looking at me and going, look at this dummy, he's struggling with his speech, he's ticking, he's contorting his face because he can't get a word out. Now, all those things, you know, that perception. Most people are wonderful. Most people will sit and listen to you, look at you in the eye. And again, yeah, eye contact, so very important. Now, keeping our listener interested in what we're saying for a start, and, you know, effectively communicating.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because not all listeners are able to provide eye contact back. You know, a communication is two-way, isn't it? So it's not just about you as the stammer or stutterer communicating with a neutral person. The person you're communicating with has their own issues that they're dealing with. Yeah. So that makes it harder.
Exactly. Yeah. On the program, we do the 4-day course and addresses various things. And on the third day, we're taken out by a coach on the program, and they show us how to, you know, their challenge is to speak to 100 people in the street. It can be people in shops, people just on the street walking around, asking them various questions, communicating in general, you know, being the first person to make the point of contact, using techniques that, well, using the McGuire technique, and, you know, doing that, you know, gives you a real insight into how people are looking at the person who is, you know, showing you how to communicate, or giving the examples of communication, and how they can use the technique as well in those speaking situations. It's so very important, because then it shows you, because again, you know, I just didn't know how to communicate effectively. I wasn't practicing the tools. I wasn't practicing those skills that, you know, most people learn when they're 4 years old, sat in school. Yeah, most 4-year olds can speak beautifully. You know, they have no issue whatsoever with communication. You know, their language is limited by their age and by their experience, but they can effectively communicate. Yeah. Dad, I'm hungry. Dad, can I have a biscuit? Mum, can I have a hug, please? Yeah. Those things they can say.
So right from that age, you didn't feel able to communicate those thoughts because of your stammer. Is that right?
It's just basically, yeah. Pick me up, hug me. Yeah. It was, yeah. You know,
And then we talk a lot about social communication difficulties and children arriving at school not being able to speak properly. It puts a big barrier in the way of communication, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. I mean, I love listening to people who can really communicate beautifully. I really, really do. Now, yourselves, Andrew, and also David as well, good communicators. And my brother Kevin, my eldest brother, he communicates so well. I've seen him chair various meetings and speak in front of my old company, which was Exmoor Plastics Limited in Taunton, and, you know, he speaks wonderfully. He uses pauses, and just, it's all so fluent. It's all so easy.
But he doesn't have to think about it, does it? So you've had to learn all these techniques.
Yeah.
So for you, what were the first useful techniques you learnt to help you be able to assert yourself as a communicator?
I think not being meek, you know, not allowing myself to, you know, to whisper my words, you know, because I didn't want people to hear me stuttering. You know, whisper, just be very quiet, keep myself held back, literally holding back, which is, you know, such a, I mean, not every stutter is the same. Most of them aren't the same. But you know, we're all victims of that particular issue in our lives, and that, you know, just holds us back, some more than others. You know, some people are good at just getting out there and going, you know, whether I stutter or not, I'm going to speak, and to hell with it. If you don't like it, then tough. You know, which I've always admired as well.
Patrick, you very kindly said that Kate and I are fluent. Actually, most of us at times, even though we may sound fluent, we have an element of the imposter syndrome. So, you know, confidence has sometimes evaporated, and we feel that everybody else knows far more about what we're going to say than we do, and that if we didn't keep talking, perhaps they'd laugh at us. It's the feelings inside, whether or not one has a stutter or a stammer, or whether one's able to be perceived to talk fluently. I think we all carry the same human feelings at one level.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, again, it's back to perceptions. Yeah, we might look at somebody who speaks beautifully and is able to put across their ideas, you know, their thoughts, feelings, and emotions about a topic. And yeah, you know, they'll have issues. They might have got up after a hideous night's sleep. They might have real issues on their mind. You know, might have bills to pay. You know, walking on the street, you know, there's people there who look like they don't want to speak to anybody. You know, all sorts of their own troubles, their own imposter syndrome. You know, they're walking around going, oh, you know, what am I doing here? You know, literally, what am I doing here? I don't belong here. You know? Yeah.
And I think there's so much more to communication, isn't there, than just speech. And as you've very eloquently described, as a small child, because you were denied speech, you then feel that you didn't develop the other aspects of communication, the being able to assert yourself and having something that's worthwhile listening to. And that must be quite difficult then to develop that. So how did, because you're a very clear communicator now, how did you get the confidence to be able to say what you're thinking and be able to communicate so effectively?
Well, thank you very much. That's really kind. I think it's just grown over the years. I've been a member of the program now, the Maguire program, for 15 years. My first course was 2008, March in Swindon. And, you know, they just encouraged us. I mean, it took a while for me to get going. I was very, very good at just being quiet, meek, sat in the corner. More happy, more able to play the fool, act the fool a little bit, you know, play up, then actually really communicating, getting across my thoughts and feelings. And I think that over the years since that first course, since I used to go on the support groups that they organise as well, that are in various places. Taunton doesn't have a support group, but Bridgewater does, certainly did. So I attended there once every 2 weeks, and that was great, you know, listening to people there, particularly my old coach, Martin Coombs, who is a Bridgewatonian, and you know, he sadly passed away quite recently. But he was such a massive influence on me, and he encouraged me to push myself out there, you know, make phone calls, phone up coaches on the program, speak to them about how they deal with situations, speak to them about, you know, something coming up in my own personal life, getting out there, making contacts, you know, outside the program, not just doing them during courses, but actually just going out and speaking to people and, you know, challenging yourself, phoning up a radio station saying, I want to speak to you about the fact that I stutter, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Yeah,
it's about having standing on a soapbox to talk about, isn't it? It's having different topics because if there's a barrier in your way, which was the stuttering, so you didn't talk, so then you didn't have things to talk about. So I mean, I'm assuming from what you're saying that the Maguire program encourages you to realise that you've got something interesting to talk about and how to then communicate better.
Yeah, definitely. No. I think you're right. I think absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, of finding your voice, but, you know, finding about how your voice works and about how you want to use your voice to communicate. Because obviously, you know, we all think about stuff all the time. We all have points of view, either politically or something to do with just an idea about, you know, somebody else's problem, maybe, you know, about how they can solve or get towards solving their own issue. You know, being able to listen, taking what people are saying, it's just, you know, that's a really, really valuable thing that I've only just really learned quite recently in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, that's lovely. And being able to help other people as well on the program. I'm a coach myself. I've been now for the last 8 years, I think. And I'm also a course instructor intern as well. So one day I'd like to do my own course, hopefully in the future anyway. And that'd be lovely. And being able to help other people as well, just by listening to them, you know, showing them how I communicate, using my own voice to, you know, you can either project your voice, you know, as you would do in a large auditorium, or you can use the techniques, you know, because you're feeling a little bit apprehensive, you know, so you use block release to really assert yourself. You can use a hit and hold.
Can you feel that you're about to become blocked in your speech and then you use those techniques to overcome it?
Yeah, it's not just a feeling of that almost happening, but also about how that, you know, happens while you're communicating. You know, you actually sort of, you have a block and you counteract that block by releasing all of your air.
Okay, that's fascinating.
And going again with the same word, ideally. You know, so if I blocked on the word speech, so speech, and being more assertive, really attacking that first sound, that word, because it's a word that's given you an issue.
Okay, and then by having these techniques, then you're confident enough that you know you're going to be able to come out with the words, and then that allows you to be more assertive in your communication. So they're all connected, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's, you know, it's so it's yeah. I mean, there's such a large aspect, you know, to communication that I find in my own everyday life, and it's just huge, really, and having the ability now to be able to speak to people is just great, and being able to, you know, problem solve for people too. Lovely.
And how has this helped you at work?
Well, at the sterile services, we clean and sterilise, clean, repackage, sterilise the operation, the instruments that are used in operations on the wards as well. Not so much on the wards nowadays, in some of the clinics as well. And, you know, so if a theatre has an issue with something that hasn't either gone correctly because there's been an issue with our packing, they phone up and they, you know, they put in a non-conformance against us, or even raise an issue against us as well. So, you know, we have to communicate with the theatre or with the clinic to discuss with them about how to solve the issue, you know, be it a broken instrument that happened at their end or our end. And having that communication and that skill to be able to communicate and be able to understand and be able to reassure people, reassure clients that you can sort their problem out is massive, really, I think. I mean, also...
Hospitals are very sort of fast and busy environments. There's a lot going on, and what you're doing is vitally important. So that must be a very pressurized environment for you, does that impact on how you're able to communicate?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, not every phone call goes really well. You know, some phone calls can be a little bit turbulent. I can stammer in some, but I always try and finish off. If I do have a turbulence, I go back, I try and repeat that word if I can get the opportunity to do so. But I always try and finish off a conversation with a positive thing.
That's interesting. And we're recording at the moment on Zoom. Listeners, you, of course, are listening to a podcast, but we've got the joy of being able to see each other on this call as we record. Patrick, how important do you think it is in communication that you can actually see the other person, either in the same room or at least on a video call, to get those extra non-verbal cues?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's, you know, really, really good to have the ability to be able to see the person in front of you, look in their eyes, see how they're, you know, see how they're feeling as they're communicating to you. You know, you can tell if someone's angry, you can tell if someone's tense because they're, you know, there's something that's gone wrong. They're having pressure from their boss or from someone else in their department, in their theatre, and you know, you can see that. You can see that. Also hear it in their voice as well. And if you're on the phone, another technique that we're taught is to, you know, is to focus on something else. If I'm having a phone conversation at work, then I'll look at a piece of paper on the wall. I'll look at a certain word, focus on that, and you know, tell, you know, obviously the person on the other end of the phone call, but you know, tell the word or the dot on the wall. What I'm saying, basically, yeah.
And that's a useful technique for any of us who find ourselves using the phone, really, isn't it? Whether we've got a stammer or not. Because I often have problems hearing people on the phone, so I find talking to a dot on the wall quite effective.
Yeah, it's right. It's that focal point. You know, if you haven't got the eyes, pick something else.
That's really interesting. So you're putting your attention on almost a surrogate of the person so that you can actually get your attention focused, or you're distracting your visual. Because we know that the words are only a certain percentage, 9% or something like that of what's said, but vocal tone is a lot more as well, let alone any non-verbals, hand movements, smiles or facial movements. And so It enables you to pick up all the tones and other aspects of communication and to give back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Using your voice, you know, modulating, you know, what happens, you know, the frequency of the voice, you know, going, you know, a bit higher when you're trying to emphasize something, or going nice and low when you're trying to, you know, either instill calm or project your voice, make yourself, in my case, slow down and focus on that, because if you're speaking using a deep tone, then you're using a bit more air. More air is passing over your vocal cords, allowing you to speak, and you have to pause and breathe again, which is such a massive part of the Maguire technique. It's the breath. It's all about the breath. Nice and assertive, using plenty of technique, but also using the pause, not only to breathe, but also to think about what you're going to say next and how you're going to say it.
That's really interesting. Someone said to me that the voice, as it were, sits on top of a column of breath that's coming through the larynx at a slow rate, says he, without taking breath, and that actually most of us forget to breathe during our speaking. In fact, some people can go on a very long time without breathing, without taking breath. But if you go back to ancient wisdoms, if you go back to yoga, if you go back to many other disciplines of health, they focus on and they concentrate upon the regularity and the rhythmic breathing of the in and the out. And I suppose some of us sort of perch our conversation chattering away on top of that, whereas actually what you're saying is that if we focus on the breath as an important part of that, a and make sure that it has a rhythm, that it supports the ability to articulate, to express yourself. Would I be, is that a guess?
No, totally. Totally, it's a bit like singing.
A bit like singing, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't personally sing, at least not very often, maybe in the shower occasionally when I'm feeling like I want to insult everyone's ears. But you never hear a stammerer. Sorry, you never hear a singer stammer.
Was it Gareth Gates?
Yeah. He was the course instructor on my second Maguire course. Yeah. He's a Maguire-y. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So tell me about Gareth Gates, because I know nothing about this.
Gareth Gates was on a show called Pop Idol, which was one of the forerunners of The X Factor. And yeah, he was the same year as, I think, is it Will Young? Yeah, Will Young. That's right. He came second, well, the runner up to Will Young, basically. Yeah. Yeah, second place. And yeah, he's now a course instructor on the Maguire program.
He had a severe stammer, Andrew, but he sang beautifully and didn't stammer while he was singing at all, but was virtually paralysed and incapable of speaking when he wasn't singing at one point. Is that a fair comment, Patrick?
Yeah, totally, yeah. I mean, yeah, he found it so difficult. There was one or two times when they interviewed him during the show, because it was a bit like The X Factor. You know, they had the tuition parts where they do that, but they speak to the person who was being coached as well. And Gareth, found it very difficult. I think he was about 19 when he did that, thereabouts. And he's still active on the program. Not so much as he was, but yeah, he's still active on the program.
I'm very interested. Yeah. My little inquiring mind is sort of is curious about the neurophysiology behind this. We know that speech is mainly a left brain function, left hemisphere function, but that music actually is both hemispheres. And as I think it's Professor Alan Harvey from Australia who writes about music and neurophysiology and the brain. Language divides, but music unites. So perhaps whatever the block is, and I can't do more than conjecture where the block might be, whether it's a feeling block, whether it's a neurophysiological block, whether it's something else, but music seems to transcend that. How interesting.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, Dave Maguire, who was the founder of the Maguire Program, he spoke to a lot of people during his development of the program. And particularly he was interested in the fact that singers don't stutter when they sing. And he particularly looked at opera singers who really do use their, I guess, well, you guys know a lot more about it than me, about the diaphragm being, you know, almost like two parts. There's the butt, there's the part at the bottom of your lungs, you know, which is attached to the bottom of your lungs, which obviously separates out the rest of the organs from your lungs itself and allows you to breathe. You know, it gives you that the actual motor function itself of breathing. You know, it goes up and down. When it's resting, it's uppermost position. But also that that's called the crural diaphragm. But the costal diaphragm is the bit that's attached to your spine, which then leads, and that's the bit, you know, which not only allows you to speak, but also to sing. You know, you use that when you're exercising as well. You know, and it's not necessarily just a standard motor function, you know, which happens without even thinking about it, but you have to think about it sometimes as well. When you sing, particularly if you're an opera singer, you really have to focus on your breath, because you want to project out that, in some cases, not every case, beautiful sound, and it's a wonderful tool that we're encouraged to use on the Maguire program too. Yeah,
And Andrew and I are now both busy trying to work out which bits of our diaphragm are going up and down as we breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sort of an easy way to think about it is if you're sat relaxed, you know, and you look down at yourself as you're breathing, generally your tummy moves when you're using your crural diaphragm. It's just, you know, your tummy. It's just, it isn't really anything other than instinct. You're just keeping yourself alive. It's your brain saying, just get on with it. Keep going because you're still alive. Whereas the costal part, the bit that comes, you know, the bit that you have to use, if you're thinking about it, if you want to actually perform something, like opera singing, like singing in general, get as much lungs as much oxygen in your lungs. Let me say that again, because I was getting too fast. If you want to get as much oxygen in your lungs when you're exercising or singing, then you use that forceful costal diaphragm. And that's the bit that gives you the power.
This is fascinating physiology. And I think we're going to sadly have to wrap this up for our listeners because we're moving up to the end. Patrick, next time you come back, so we've heard about Will Young and Gareth Gates. I'm going to go, I hope it doesn't sound highbrow, but I'm a bit older. And so I'm going to ask Patrick, do you want to practice Verdi's Nessun Dorma for Turandot for the next time you come along and join us? It's quite often on Classic FM. So. Hey, no,
it's quite a piece, that has to be said. Yeah.
Fantastic. Wasn't
it? It was in the charts, wasn't it?
That's normal, yeah.
That's right, yeah. 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 Was it Pavarotti?
Oh no, Pavarotti, yes, you're right. It is.
Yeah. Pavarotti, yeah, yeah.
This is
amazing.
Fascinating conversation, Patrick, but unfortunately we're running out of time. Are there any last minute final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with us to leave our listeners with?
Oh, thank you very much. Words of wisdom. I mean, for people who aren't stammerers, yeah, if you can take the time to first of all understand that the person is having an issue speaking. Now they're struggling with their words, they're contorting their face, they aren't having a good time at all. They're looking away, not giving you any eye contact, no focal point, just looking away because they don't want to see either pity or scorn in your eyes. All they want to do is to have the opportunity to be heard, to get their words out, because it's so frustrating. I've had so many times in the past where I've been, you know, just humiliated, you know, more myself than actually other people have been embarrassed for me, but I've been so embarrassed. So if you have the time to be able to listen to people, you know, with a stammer, then please do so. You know, you don't have to try and fill in the words for them. Just listen to what they're saying. And allow them to speak, allow them to finish their words, because it's so very important and so scary for stammerers as well. And if you're a stammerer and you're listening to this as well, I mean, some days are better than others for me personally. Some conversations from day to day are better than others as well. But I guarantee you, if you come along to the Maguire program, which is online. It can be reached online, I should say, at www.maguireprogram.com. That will give you access to the website. That will give you access as well to the regional director of the UK, North and South, Matt Wilton, who's a great guy, actually lives fairly close to Taunton. Give us a shout, really, because there are other places as well. You know, there's Michael Palin as well. He, you know, there's a program run by them. I think there's, well, I can't remember them all off by heart or offhand, but yeah, there's lots of stammering help out there.
And we will, of course, put all the links in the program notes at the end of the podcast so people will be able to find them there. Patrick, thank you so much for your time. This has been really fascinating. And Andrew, thank you. And to all our listeners, go well.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresida, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Kate Staveley. The show was produced by David Seeley and Bob Hunt's music.